Hello, friends. In this episode, we talk to Chris Hardy. He's a senior software engineer, special projects at Automattic. Automattic being the company behind WordPress.com. In the beginning of the episode, I mistakenly say that they are behind WordPress, which WordPress is the open source project, and WordPress.com is the commercial offering from Automattic to enable customers to use WordPress without having to set up their own instance. Chris also has over 16 years experience as an entrepreneur, co-founding and being the principal of Somersault LLC of Richmond, Indiana from 97 to 2014. Really interesting episode. I hope you enjoy it. I'd love to hear some feedback. As always, you can tweet me at Dave_Albert or email us podcast@dave-albert.com. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Dave Albert. In this show, I talk about technology, building a company as a CTO and co-founder, and have guests to discuss their roles in technology and entrepreneurship. In this episode, we're joined by Chris Hardy, senior software engineer, special projects at Automattic, from the fine folks who make WordPress, and in a previous life, an entrepreneur. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Well, my pleasure. Hopefully the audience's pleasure as well. Could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. One quick clarification I want to make on your intro. We always are careful at Automattic to say we as a company are not the ones who make WordPress. WordPress is a community project, and we can talk more about that later. It's an open source project. So we're the company behind WordPress.com and a bunch of other WordPress products and services. And it's a distinction that confuses some folks. So we can get into that. But I want to be careful because there are many, many people who work on WordPress that don't have anything to do with Automattic as well.
Of course. Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
That's a very valid point. I'm sure of all the open source projects out there, there are sometimes companies who try to take more credit than they deserve.
But yeah. Well, as you said, I work in software, and I'm a software developer is sort of my core role, but I do lots of different things in tech and have a lot of different things that hold my interest, and I'm excited to talk with you about those. But my current work is working in the WordPress world and just helping people have a great experience with WordPress as a tool for publishing, for sharing what they do online. Whether they're a business or an organization or an individual. We say this statistic a lot, but not a lot of people know it, that, you know, WordPress as a platform, as a content publishing tool, powers, I think, over 33 or 34% of the web at this point. And so it's, you know, if you visited a website in the last few days, it's probably one of them's probably been running WordPress. So it's really exciting and interesting to be a part of a group of people who can, you know, the code that we work on and the sites that we build are a part of such a big ecosystem and community of people excited about publishing online.
Yeah, that's a number of our sites are built on WordPress. And in fact, our UX UI designer, he actually did a large part of the Portuguese translation.
Nice.
So our company has a bit of a connection to WordPress.
Awesome. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, and it's just, yeah, it's always so fun to hear how people are using it. You know, I get to go to conferences or meetups where, you know, you have everyone from someone who is just starting to blog and they're thinking about what they want to say to the world, or you know, they have commentary or analysis to offer. And then you have, you know, small businesses, mom and pop shops that are just trying to get, you know, their presence, their visibility on the web to increase a bit. And WordPress is a great tool for that. You have not-for-profit organizations all over the world who can, you know, launch a site really quickly and at a pretty low cost. And then you have, you know, huge enterprise organizations that are using WordPress for really high end, high profile stuff. So, without trying to sound too much like an advertisement for it, just, you know, being a part of that community has been really, really special. And, I don't think I could have imagined that when I first started out in tech a long time ago. So it's been it's a really neat journey.
So what kind of special projects is it that you work on?
Yeah. So, my team in particular, you know, we basically exist to help people who are moving to WordPress, have a great experience with that. So we're working with, usually it's, more influential people and organizations, some not-for-profits who are transitioning to WordPress, and we're, helping them with that. We're advising on that, sometimes getting into the guts of that process. And, you know, there's lots of different ways that you can start with WordPress. I mean, as we said, WordPress.com is a service is one. And so we help people definitely move on to WordPress.com, but in some cases we're helping them move onto their own like self-hosted WordPress site or just advising on how the migration process might work. So it's neat because we get to work on some projects where, you know, people are sort of encountering the tool for the first time and we get to help them learn about it and get excited about it and see what it can do. And to see a tool like that through beginner's eyes or someone who's just new to it is a fun experience to get to have that over and over again.
That's interesting. There is so much out there running on WordPress, but it's in so many different, it's running in so many different ways. So, you know, like you've got the WordPress.com, the WordPress.org. Is that the one do I have that right? So WordPress.com is the commercial one and org would be for nonprofits.
Right. You can create a free site on WordPress.com, but it is it's the sort of software as a service version of WordPress where you can go sign up and start a site for free. But then if you want some extra features, you know, there's some paid upgrades at different levels. We refer to WordPress.org as sort of the community site or the community landing page where if you want to download and install WordPress in your own hosting environment, you can start there. If you're looking to contribute to the project or otherwise be involved in the community, you can start there. And of course, many web hosts nowadays, if you sign up for an account, you know, they're going to offer you a sort of one-click get WordPress up and running option too. There's so many web hosts that know the value there and sort of have that as a feature too. So there's a lot of different ways that people come into the system, but yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's go back into your past a little bit. And can you tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey?
Sure. You know, I was certainly as a young person, as a kid, I was taking things apart, trying to understand how they work and whether it was appliances at home or, you know, when my dad first brought home a Texas Instruments, I think it was the TI-99 computer. And, you know, it had cartridges that you could put in to play games or puzzles, but then there were ways that you could also do basic programming on it in the basic programming language. And like I think you say on your site, I also had the experience of a compact portable computer making its way into my house. And, you know, I don't know how many hours of my life I gave to that, but it was so exciting to see and to just get to poke around and explore and see what this thing could do. And I just remember, I don't know if it was DOS at that point, but certainly beyond the sort of word processing tool that, you know, I think my mom had to use for her work. When she wasn't using it, I was trying to get into the underlying operating system and see what it could do. So, a lot of self-taught exposure that way. And then I, you know, had various people in my life through the years who were encouraging of that. So it probably wasn't a surprise when I studied computer science in college. And I think that's where I really developed my passion for the web. I mean, this was in the late 90s, and it just seemed like every day something new and magical was happening in the world of the internet. And, you know, at that time, of course, it was the web, but it was other services too, and connecting all these things together, email and Gopher and FTP and all, you know, all these tools and services out there. And you know, I love other kinds of computer science and software development, but I think the immediacy of the web has always been just such a joy for me in terms of being able to create something and put it out there into the world very quickly and easily, and, you know, send someone a link to it. So, so you know, just having that feeling that this was a thing and great things were ahead for it, I was definitely excited about finding some kind of career or way of spending time that let me work in that world. I did an internship at a website development firm in Cincinnati, just a summer internship, and you know, it was hand coding HTML and slicing up graphics and putting them together into image maps and fun stuff like that. Lots of Photoshop work. And then a friend of mine, Mark, who also went to the same college, he did that same internship the next summer. And as he and I were talking that summer, you know, we sort of found ourselves getting really excited about doing that kind of web development work. And it was one of those, you know, half joking, half serious conversations, like, hey, do you want to go into business together? and, you know, we were both, both people interested in lots of different things. So I think both knew that, like, oh yeah, this could turn into something, or it could just be one of those ideas in passing. But the more time we spent together and the more we talked about it, the more we found ourselves fleshing out the details of what this business would be and what the name would be and how it would be structured and what we would do. And so we, you know, at some point we're like, okay, we're going to register a domain name. We're going to, you know, let it be known that we're taking on clients and go from there. I don't think either of us, I mean, both of us had experiences creating businesses or projects. And so it didn't feel like a big leap, in some ways, but we definitely had friends and family who were, you know, a little bit worried about us, like, okay, when are you going to get a real job? Like, web design sounds fun, but what's the thing that's going to make money? And we had a surprising number of people also tell us about partnerships as something to avoid, you know, just saying, you know, partnerships fail. I think, you know, one accountant we met with said, you know, 9 out of 10 partnerships fail. So be really careful. And it was probably good advice, but it, you know, we were just like, oh, you know, what could go wrong? Like, we're both excited about this, and this is what we want to do. So it's going to be great. And you know, partnerships are hard, it turns out. So we had to work really hard at it, but it was a great collaboration. And we sort of went from there. And I'm happy to keep talking about that adventure, but that was sort of how it all started.
Nice. That's one of the companies, not my current company, but I had a very similar beginning. My colleague and friend asked, hey, you know how to build things. I've got this idea for a site. How do you think I should do it? Mm-hmm. And I started talking to him about, oh, I do this and then I do this. I'm like, well, actually, let me just throw together a couple of things for you so you can see what I'm talking about, because it'll be easier. And then I built a few things and I said, well, I guess you're probably going to need some. And wait, yeah. I think we're kind of working on this together, aren't we?
Right, right.
Yeah, we are. Let's just be equal partners on it. Yeah, okay, let's do that. And it turned into a business. He then stepped out of it. And that business still exists. But the only thing it does is contain this podcast. So.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a good experience. And I mean, I really appreciate, like, I think I'm someone who can get stuck really easily in my head with ideas or like things that I know I want to do. But some of the, you know, the best experiences I've had in life with turning ideas into action have been because I've, you know, encountered someone else who's been able to say, like, let's make that happen. Or they've been able to help me refine that idea or offer their own version. And then we can sort of go off and make it happen. So I'm really grateful when that happens, because it's all too easy to have a great idea and then look at all the other things you need to do in life and move on. So, you know, when you find someone who can help you take that spark and turn it into a full-blown fire, like, that's definitely worth paying attention to.
And you did that for over 16 years? Is that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, again, the sense of like, let's build this thing and see what happens, to go from that to running this business for, yeah, almost 17 years. Just, you know, never would have expected that. And I think, you know, each year, those first couple of years, we would kind of talk and say, you know, how's this going? And do we want to keep going? Like, is this, you know, should we build it? And this is before we, you know, we had employees and that kind of thing. And, you know, eventually we just stopped having that conversation because we were having fun and we were learning a lot and challenging ourselves. And, you know, we still talked a lot about the business and what to do with the business, but the question mark of, you know, is this going to be the thing we do, sort of went away. And that, you know, we took it from there. So yeah, over the years, I mean, we got as big as 12 people. We had clients around the country. We were really focused on an open source approach, trying to use open source software and contribute back to open source software. In the world of web development, you know, that was always a mixed bag because you'd have these really great desktop production tools like Dreamweaver or Photoshop, which were not open source, but then you have, you know, great things like the Apache web server, and, you know, different tools for producing and running websites that were open source. So we tried to move in that direction as much as we could. And our office was always here where I live in Richmond, Indiana. So it was very much a brick and mortar experience. We started in a, you know, small sort of cubby area that another tech company let us use. And then we eventually got our own small office and then moved into yet another bigger office. And I think, you know, that one of the hard parts about running a tech business in a small Midwestern town and just finding and keeping good people. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a strong tech community, or at least one that lent itself to a huge pool of possible employees. But we made it work. We dabbled a little bit in remote work. Didn't do so well there. I mean, we were just not good at it, and and it's hard. So if you're not good
and at it, yeah. that was, I mean, being that you closed down in 2014, that was before a lot of the tools that are available now that make it so much easier.
Yeah, it was like pulling teeth to make basic things like, you know, I mean, phone calls, maybe that was the one thing that went well, but, you know, video chat tools and document collaboration, all these things that we kind of take for granted now, felt like a lot harder then. And that, you know, that wasn't that long ago. So it was a really great experience. And, you know, we, over the years, we shifted around from sort of general, like, building sites to more of a focus on software development. So figuring out, you know, if you can take Perl and or PHP plus a database, like what can you get with that? Building some applications for people that needed something more interactive. As soon as Drupal and WordPress were sort of coming into maturity as tools, we really adapted those. And for a while, we were probably split equally between Drupal and WordPress, but in terms of a tool to use, but eventually started focusing much more on WordPress as a tool that was easier to get something out the door much more quickly. So, so it was a great, I should say the business was called Somersault. I don't know if we've said that yet, but it was a name we picked. We really liked the images that it evoked around energy and youthful motion and all that kind of thing. So we tried to instill that into the business along the way too.
What made you decide to stop?
That's a good question. You know, there were hard parts of the business, as there are with any business. I mean, sales and the different cycles of sales when it comes to a client facing business like that. That's always hard, especially if, like me, you were doing sales on top of doing other things related to running the business. Throughout growing the business, there was always the tension of like, do we want to be, or are we okay with being just kind of a life cycle, lifestyle company? So being happy with our size and the level of growth and income we had achieved, or do we want to be constantly pushing for growth? And I think we had at different times, different sort of understandings of what was the best thing there. I mentioned challenges with staffing, finding and keeping good people. And for me, there was also just personally, I don't know if it was stress or just the sense of like doing the same thing for a certain amount of time, you know, brought out, habits and patterns that sometimes were great and sometimes I wasn't happy with. And, so we, you know, around that time we were arriving at a couple of key turning points in the life of the business. You know, should we grow a lot bigger, stay the size we are? Should we spend, invest, take some risks, or sort of keep going the way that we have? And We just had a lot of hard conversations as a group about like, what should we do? And of course, I was in a different position as sort of the principal of the company than my employees were. But with every conversation like that, we tried to make it a group conversation. And we just decided that it was the right time to start winding that down. And that wasn't an easy process, but I feel really proud that we took the time, I especially took the time to wind it down in a way that took care of our clients and took care of my employees and made sure that they had places to land. We had a hosting business attached to the company and making sure we could find another hosting business that would take on those sites. So that winding down process took over a year to do. And I don't think I would have done it any other way because it was important to me to not just send out the stereotypical, like, we're turning everything off next week. Good luck. Like we didn't want to do that to anybody. So, I was conflicted about it, but as soon as I was doing it and when it was done, I knew it was the right thing because I was really ready for just in my life being in a different place and moving on to other things. And I guess that's one point of encouragement I would make to anyone who's listening is that, if you're in a situation that you think, there's some other version of your life out there that might be more fulfilling, like it's worth spending the time to see, what is actually possible there. I know in some cases it's not as easy as saying, I'm just going to wind this thing down and do something else. Like there's real life considerations to take into account, but I'm glad for that change, and I'm it was a real privilege to be able to have that business and run that business, but it was also a privilege to be able to move on to something else too. So.
Well, that's what you said there about hard decision, but it felt right as you started it. That seems to be typical. That some of the most stress that I've noticed is before you're able to make the decision that somehow subconsciously you already know the answer to, but consciously you don't know which answer to pick.
Sure.
And as soon as you pick one, you realized whether it was the right decision or not, at least in the way your body reacts to it, if not the way it turns out.
Absolutely. And it's so cliche, but the whole life is too short to mm-hmm. spend time on things that don't bring you joy. And so again, if it's an option, if it's a possibility, I'm just someone who's all in favor of exploring what that means. But again, easier said than done, but still of worth course. Thinking. Yeah.
Were there times while you were winding down that you thought maybe you'd chosen the wrong path?
I think the hardest moments were, certainly thinking about and worrying about what my employees were going to do. And if I had any sense that, there was stress or anxiety on their part, like I really took that on myself as well. But I know that's in part, that's just a part of life. And I think we did okay there. Same thing for clients. I mean, we were, one of the few web development and kind of consulting marketing businesses in town. And even though we had clients all over the country, living in a small town in the Midwest, these were folks who I'd see every day on the street or at restaurants and that kind of thing. And so, having the specter of like, oh, a business is closing, like it was something that I was pretty self-conscious about and sort of worried about how that would be perceived and understood. But I think the driving idea that I had explored and challenged myself in all the ways that I knew how to in that particular role, in that particular business, in that particular setup, to be true to myself and to be true to, the idea of being an entrepreneur, I guess, I couldn't do anything other than mm-hmm. than move on. We had explored other scenarios of bringing in other leadership or selling the company or things like that. And so we tried really hard to, figure out a scenario that would work well for everyone. And it turned out that was the one. But yeah, I mean, there, to your question, there were doubts along the way, but none so serious as to make me change course. So yeah.
That's good. How did you end up with Automatic? What was the process there? Did you apply
cold or? Yeah. So, I mean, I was taking that year to wind things down and wasn't even really thinking about what I would do next because I knew I would need some space from running and owning a business. So I took that space and during that time I was, you know, was thinking about what's next. And I, you know, I had some questions about like, would I even be able to work for someone else? Like when you've quote unquote been your own boss, the idea of being an employee seemed a little bit scary. And, you know, as I looked out into the tech world, you know, at one point I had, you know, been invited by like Google to apply for a position, but that would require moving and leaving the community that I loved. And that wasn't something I was ready to do. And I, you know, so I was just like reading lots of tech books, books about tech companies, books about tech culture. And I came across one called The Year Without Pants by Scott Berkin. And it, you know, I was aware of Automattic and I had been connected to it in different ways, but never had really explored what it was as a company and how it operated, what it was like. So I read that book and I think it was, you know, immediately upon setting it down that I said to my wife, I was like, I think I found a place that could be my next thing. And, you know, she was like, what? Like, I had gone from this like wandering, I don't know what I'm going to do to like, I know where I want to apply. So I sent in an application. I think it was New Year's Day in 2015, maybe. Or no, 2014. And at that time, Automattic's hiring process was very drawn out in some cases. So it was a while before I heard back. And I went through all those stages of doubt where I was like, oh, they threw my application away right away. Like, mm-hmm. there's no way they want someone like me. Mm-hmm. But finally, I heard back and went through the interview and application process. And as you may know, there's a trial process that comes with applying at Automattic where instead of just an interview and a resume review, they actually say like, let's work together for a little while and see how this goes. It's something I'm really, this is one of those things of like, I can't believe that I didn't do that before mm-hmm. when I was running a business because the idea of kind of speed dating and hiring someone based entirely off of, you know, a couple of conversations and a resume just doesn't make sense to me anymore now that I've sort of become comfortable and excited about this trial process. So mm-hmm. All that's to say, I went through that process and was hired and, it was a really big adventure for me. I mean, this distributed work model, the company is completely distributed, over 900 of us scattered around the world. You know, there's no central offices. The creed that Automattic has on its website, which, you know, I encourage you to check out or link to, was just really appealing to me. Really a kind of in line with values and practices of the open source community. And I was just excited to use some of the skills that I'd been putting to work for my clients before that and projects, use those at a bigger level and on higher profile projects. And I got to do that. So it was a really good choice. And, you know, I had that sense of like, okay, I'll try this out, see how it goes. Maybe I'll be there a year, maybe a couple of years. And then here I am, you know, over 5 years later. So it was another one of those things where I didn't quite know mm-hmm. how serious it was going to be and what it was going to be like, but it's turned out really well.
That's awesome. So I know a number of companies that have either solely remote or very heavily remote. They'll have regular meetings where physical meetups where employees, whether it be all of the company or large groups of people, will get together. Does Automattic have that?
We do. We do. Everyone who applies understands they'll be working from home, but also understands that they'll be traveling a couple times per year. And we do a combination of different styles of meetups. There's currently we do a once a year sort of all company meetup. We call it the grand meetup. Mm. And that's everyone gets together in one location for about a week. And we have workshops and classes and presentations and projects that we work on together. We do fun things together. We have meals together. there's town halls and conversations with people that you might not normally get to talk to or spend time with. So it's a really intense and amazing mm-hmm. you know, time, and especially as the company has grown. You know, I joined when it was just in the low 200s, and now we're up over 900. So wow. It's a pretty amazing experience to look at a sea of faces, you know, people who, again, from all around the world, who are working with these common goals. And then at other times in the year, we also do team-specific meetups, or sometimes like division-specific meetups, where team will get together again for about a week in some location, hopefully something, you know, pretty interesting. We try to, you know, go someplace where we can enjoy the scenery while we work together and have some nice meals and that kind of thing. So I think that was something about Automattic that really appealed to me, is being able to travel and see the world a bit. And that's been a great, you know, great experience, not only for the geographical sights and sounds, but also just to meet people from different parts of the world and be exposed to different points of view, different cultures. Like it's been a really neat experience that I just didn't have when I was running a more brick and mortar company based in the Midwest United States.
Yeah. It's our company. I mean, we're small. I guess it depends on who you ask, but we're much smaller than Automattic. We have 10 people, and five of the people that are working with us happen to be in India.
Okay, nice.
And we try to bring over everybody once or twice a year, and really find that those in-person meetings make a huge difference when talking over Slack or video chats. It's funny how much of a difference that makes.
Just
that real world connection.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think as much as I'm an advocate for distributed work as a new model for work in general, I think those in-person interactions are really key. And I'm an advocate, you know, within Automattic for the idea that, like, if you're hiring a bunch of people onto a team, like trying to get those people together in person with the team pretty soon after that hire is, can be really important for morale and for, you know, having people gel. And I, you know, I'm someone with like a pretty dry sense of humor, and like I think, you know, the jokes that I make in Slack often don't land unless like you can picture my, you know, totally expressionless face saying and you've spent time with me in person. And so I definitely benefit from like meeting my colleagues before my sense of humor really can come through. But the same is true, I think, for all different personality types. Like there's just no substitute for having a feel for, you know, what the sound of someone's voice is, or just how they communicate, how they sort of interact with the world. And I think that brings out just a lot of wonderful texture in interactions that you then have in more text-based formats. So
was the hardest part of the transition from, I mean, other than just the fear of working for someone else, but going from, you know, almost 17 years of working for yourself to then working for someone else, what besides just the fear of that was the biggest challenge?
I think, imposter syndrome was definitely a large factor. I mean, there was, you know, again, for me, like, living in a small town in the Midwest, doing the work we did, I felt really proud of it. I felt like we were doing great work, and I felt like, you know, the amount of money we charged our clients was well worth it. But then, you know, you start talking to a company that's essentially this, you know, kind of Silicon Valley based. I say that even though there's no offices mm-hmm. there, but it feels like more of a national or global tech company, and you start interacting with colleagues who have been hired from all over the world, supposedly as sort of the top, you know, top people in different skill sets or fields. Like, it was pretty intimidating, and it took me a long time to feel okay with just I'm here, I belong here. Like they want me here, and I'm supposed to be here, and that could happen, you know, even on a good day where I just like felt really proud of like what I got done, you know, the things that I was a part of at the company, like that sense of, you know, that question of, do I belong, was still lingered. And it, you know, I don't think it's entirely, an unhealthy thing to just pay attention to, like, do I belong here? Like, I think it's a good thing to be aware of. But I know that there's a version of it that can be unhealthy and that can be kind of paralyzing. So I was glad that as I settled in and as I felt more confident and comfortable in the role, that it went away to some degree, you know, for the most part. there are still days where we hire some pretty amazing people, and I'll meet my colleagues and be like, oh wow, they're just in a different league. That's more exciting than anything else. And I think adjusting to distributed work was a big change. I mean, it was, at times lonely, confusing, hard, just like draining. And I early on remember just having a really hard time with some of the cultural practices in place that, are there to ensure that knowledge is not locked up inside of, one person's head or one phone call or one email exchange. And the idea of, writing everything out. We have an internal sort of documentation and conversation tool called P2. And so the idea of writing everything out when, in my previous life, it would have been an in-person meeting or a phone call, to adapt that approach. It was a big transition. And Automattic's also a place that is really depends on everyone there being very self-directed, very okay with not a lot of management oversight, not a lot of structure. Sort of expect people to come in and think about things from the big picture perspective of like, what are we trying to achieve and how can I be a part of that? And I felt like I was pretty good at that because I'd been running a business and I was thinking big picture all the time, but it was still disorienting to come into a larger organization that had that approach and to really sink my teeth into the idea of like, okay, I'm going to choose my own adventure here. And like someone will tell me if it's not going well, but it's up to me to make sure I'm doing the right things at the right time. So,
yeah, I can imagine that just like show up on your first day. Okay. What am I working on? I don't know. What are you working on? okay.
Well, and to make things more fun, my wife and I were traveling on my first day at Automattic, and we had decided to take advantage of this, distributed work. And we were taking some time to live in a different city, and we're staying in a friend's apartment. So like the night before, we show up in the car and unload, and we find out there's no there's no internet in this apartment. There's no internet connection. And it was one of those things we'd taken for granted. But fortunately, I had a standby hotspot, mobile hotspot. And so I spent the first, hour of my workday, like setting that up and taping that to the window so it could get pointed out to the sky in the right direction so that I could join the team call that was starting, later that day. So, it was just stuff like that. That's really fun memories of getting going in a new environment.
Well, I would think would remind you of the very early days of starting a company and having to, scrap things together.
Just and bootstrapping everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. You've only, so I just see that you've just recently changed roles, but only slightly. Is that right? So you were.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my time at Automattic, I've been in a couple different roles. I started out on the VIP part of the business, which is, Automattic sort of enterprise level WordPress hosting platform and service. So I was working with a lot of the sort of high profile, high traffic publishers that use WordPress in some form and consulting and supporting them. In 2017, I joined this special projects team that I'm on now. And I was for a little over a year, working as the lead of that team. And then since then, I've just returned from a sabbatical, actually. After 5 years at Automattic, one of the sort of perks is to be able to take a 3-month sabbatical. So I took that sabbatical, and it seemed like a good time to come back into an individual contributor role as a software engineer. So that's the role I'm in now. One of the things I love about Automattic is that leadership and management are, they are important roles, and they're definitely critical to any given product or customer support effort, but they're not seen as more essential and more prized or rewarded than other kinds of roles. So whereas at some organizations, if you start on a leadership or management track, you're kind of in that track and in that path. At Automattic, people are encouraged and supported in the idea of stepping into a leadership role for some period of time and then being able to step out of that role. And that's not something you're penalized for. So it's a really neat thing. And it's allowed me at Automattic to spend different amounts of time as both an individual contributor doing software development every day, and then also to spend time in a leadership role, helping, you know, my teammates in whatever ways I can, supporting them, coaching them, hiring them, that kind of thing. So it's
neat. Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, cause like, you know, I love both sides. I love the technical stuff. My favorite is when a day just completely disappears, but not because of distractions, but because I sat down and started programming and I look up and it's like, oh, it's time to go home. What happened?
Sure.
But I also, you know, mentoring and assisting and removing obstacles from teammates, that's great too. But trying to do both at the same time, that's just not really that much fun, because it's not possible to do either of them well if you're trying to do both of them simultaneously.
Absolutely. I don't know about you. There's a different kind of mental space that I get into when I'm doing like software development or technical work, where I really need, like, you know, 2 and 3 hour chunks of time to dive deeply into a problem space and work on it. And that's just very different for me than the context switching that comes with being in constant conversation about, like, what's coming up throughout the day, or interacting with clients or partners, helping with, you know, unexpected things, and mentoring and coaching. So I'm grateful that there are opportunities in this company and in this work to transition between those, and it's definitely helped me, and it's been a real joy to be a part of a company where that's a possibility.
That's really cool. So what typically looks like it's somewhere between a year and a half that you typically fit in a specific role. Do you know, I guess with you just starting the current role, you wouldn't know where your next step would be yet. I'm just trying to get to what you think your future looks like.
Sure. I should say, like, even though my if you look at my LinkedIn profile, you know, it shows different roles over the last, you know, couple of years. In some ways, I've been doing the same kinds of work for the last couple of years on this current team, just with different areas of focus. So I'm grateful to be a part of this team and be sort of focused on that work together. It's just my day-to-day looks a little different. And there, you know, there are folks at Automattic who have been in roughly the same role for many years. I mean, since the start of the company. And each person sort of works differently, and the structure of the company can facilitate someone who's interested in lots of different things, or someone who, like, just really wants to do one kind of thing really well for a long time. In all cases, I mean, the expectation, of course, is that whatever you're doing, you're really doing well at it, and really excelling at that, and that then opens up other possibilities. So I think the company has exciting things ahead of us. I mean, you may have seen in the news, like, we just acquired Tumblr from Verizon. And, you know, there's a passion of mine is, how do we get the web back to a place where it feels like more open, and more people have more ownership and control of the things that they put online. And I really like that Automattic as a company, and WordPress as a tool, is really focused on empowering people to share and own what they put out there. Tumblr was also another really amazing service and tool that operated in that same spirit. And so it's neat that we're joining forces. Automattic's doing a lot in that sort of open web space, and I'm excited about that too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I always liked Tumblr's simplicity. No other real platform that got the momentum had quite like that. It seemed like the last few years it didn't have a solid shining path. And I hope to see that return now.
Absolutely, yeah.
With all the clients and the people you've supported, with their WordPress journeys? Are there things that you see typically that people would benefit from knowing before starting? So like typical mistakes that lots of people make, or misconceptions or anything like that that could help
in building a WordPress site?
Yeah.
Probably the biggest one, and this was a theme in my previous business as well, is that, you know, if someone is coming at website building or development as the sort of starting point of the thought, like, how do I get my message out, or how do I figure out what I want to put online, then they're often going to be frustrated, because in the process of, you know, choosing a site design, choosing a site structure, choosing content, what happens for a lot of people is they realize they don't quite know yet what their core message is. And so we would, you know, in my previous business, we would have clients come to us and say, you know, I'm ready for a website. And we, you know, even something like, you know, logo or title or slogan or just sort of key messaging points, they wouldn't have that stuff figured out. And when we'd ask about that, they'd say, oh, just, you know, you all put whatever you want on the site, just like build the site. And we, you know, we would have to kind of push back sometimes and say, no, like it's really important to understand like what you're trying to share with the world, whether it's through the web or some other medium, because, you know, if you don't have that, then whatever you put online is going to end up seeming pretty scattered. And, you know, we still work through that same kind of process today, whether it's thinking about best practices in design and interface for our clients, or just, you know, content, messaging, that kind of thing. That's, you know, it's always a big deal in figuring out what you're going to put out there. And then everything else that you do sort of flows from that, from those, that key messaging. So, that'd probably be the main thing I would say is don't start building the website as the first thing. figure out what your message is, figure out what you want to put out in the world and how you want people to feel when they encounter that. And then start, you know, thinking about the implementation strategy from there.
Okay, that's solid advice. I see that you're studying for your master's in journalism.
Yeah, it's in the realm of, you know, all the different things I'm interested in. I mean, I, in some ways, you know, journalism is just very connected to what I already think about a lot and spend a lot of time on, which is, you know, getting information out to the world, connecting people with information, stories, ideas that are going to help them and their communities and their lives. And I think, you know, probably now more than ever, maybe that's a little too self-important to say, but now more than ever, like the pursuit of the truth, especially in the form of journalism, is really important in the world. And I, you know, have seen a lot of damage done in recent years from the kind of erosion of the perception of trust, I guess, in journalism. And it's just stuff I think about all the time. I'm very politically involved in my local community, and I'm also, you know, have at various times hosted podcasts, written blogs, sort of working as a media critic, thinking about like how does the certain way that an issue or a conversation is covered in the media affect a community. And again, when you live in a small town in the Midwest, like the local paper can make a big difference in how a community conversation unfolds. I know that more than ever, people are turning to Facebook and other tools to have those conversations, but I still think journalism has an important role. And I think, you know, there's a pretty big intersection between journalism and technology, for better or worse, that's important to study. So I've been drawn to that topic for a long time, and I'm just now starting to actually take some classes and study it and see where that takes me. But it's I see it as a complement or an amplification of the work I do in the WordPress world, which is also all about publishing, democratizing publishing, and helping people get a little bit closer to the truth in their own way.
Yeah, it's you know, a lot of people do get their news from social media, but they're losing trust in that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's it's such a negative, vicious cycle, and a lot of people are losing not just trust, but losing the appetite for it from there. So, it'd be good to see more real journalism that wasn't just about headlines that are just to grab those 2 or 3 seconds of attention for clicks.
Yeah.
But as a consumer myself, I know I read more headlines than I read articles.
Right. So. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, newspapers, journalistic organizations, tech companies, I mean, everyone is trying to figure out like how can we do things that cultivate a level of authenticity and engagement and community that is meaningful in people's lives, that doesn't make them feel bad about how they spend time either online or, you know, consuming news, consuming information. And it seems to be a pretty central question of our time and of, you know, the age that we live in, whether or not you're following the headlines or not. I mean, it's just, we live in an age where, you know, what people believe about and how they feel about what they read is just so, so central. So it's an exciting time. It's a scary time to be working on that problem space. And, you know, again, I think Automatic as a company is doing great things there, but I'm also excited to be working on that in my own ways too.
Awesome. So I could ask questions about your time as an entrepreneur for all day long, but I know we've got to end the call at some point. So maybe we can do another episode sometime if you're up for that. But is there anything else that we've touched on that you don't think we did justice to?
You know, you had asked me in thinking about you know, my journey, like what are some lessons learned or things that might be useful to other people. And again, I don't presume to know anything that, that other people either, you know, can't figure out in their own way. But I don't know that I can underestimate the importance of kindness, certainly in any kind of endeavor in life, whether it's business or personal stuff. And I've just found that, you know, kindness and the sort of complementary values of honesty and integrity, they just go a long way. And I, you know, when we built our business, we built a business around the idea that, you know, we were going to try to be helpful to people and organizations and the world. And then we were going to try to, you know, let the finances and income follow that. And that approach was hard, and it wasn't always, you know, it wasn't always good business, but it was a good way to do things. And I also really appreciate the perspective that, you know, conventional ways of doing things are not necessarily the right ways, and that it's just really important to pick apart any assumptions that you're encountering in the work world, the tech world, in personal life, and really, you know, build up an understanding of how the world does work and could work based on what's, you know, what's actually in front of you, instead of you know, how people tell you things should be done. So that's something that comes to mind, and I you know, I tell my daughter every day before she goes to school, I say, you know, be kind and be curious. And I feel like that's pretty good advice. That's the best advice I know to give anybody, because it's served me well in the work that I've done and the business I built and in the rest of life too. So,
well, I love it. That's so when my co-founder and I started the company, when it was just us talking about it, you know, we wanted to set out what our core principles were to make sure to try to come back to them. And it was no assholes. I know that's not that original, but it's still, it's a real thing. Mm-hmm. Leave everything and everyone better than you found it.
Yeah.
And stay curious. So yeah, those were the three things that we said in the very beginning that we wanted to make sure that we stayed with. So you've basically boiled down the two things, the three things down to two. So
Well, and I just, you know, I appreciate conversations like this, and I appreciate, you know, like conversations I get to have with my coworkers from around the world, because I, as much as maybe in this conversation we've made it sound like I have some journey that's led to some wisdom, I know and I experience every day that there's plenty about the world that I don't know and I don't understand. And between, you know, whatever, to whatever degree I've had a sheltered life or a privileged life or a life where I haven't been able to see things from other people's perspective, like there's always a new way to look at things out there. And I'm so excited for, you know, finding what those opportunities are and seeing the world through new eyes. So thanks for having this conversation in that way too.
No, absolutely. Do you have a call to action for our listeners?
I guess I would say, you know, as I think about the tech world and the business world, which we've kind of focused on, you know, there's so many pressing problems out there in the world, and there's so many interesting problems that, you know, if you're in a position to pick what you're going to get to work on or pick who you're going to work for, you know, just try to find something that connects with what you're passionate about and that connects with some sort of great need in the world. Because I think there's a lot of problems for us as a culture and a society to solve, and I think we owe it to ourselves to spend time on that and the things that really get us excited and get us up in the morning. So yeah,
right on. I love it. How can people reach you?
My home on the web is chrishardie.com, chrishardie.com, and I'm on Twitter at Chris Hardy. And from my website, you can find a contact page that has email and everything else. So chrishardie.com is the best way.
Great. I'll add the links to both of those on the show notes.
Great.
So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, I appreciate yours. And thank you all for listening.
Until next time, remember, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.